Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid, and I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
From KQED.
David definitely is like, ocha boo 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 boo.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer. Today on The Breakdown, it's our regular Friday roundtable on some of the top political stories. This week, including a bill that would have banned the use of non-disclosure agreements, or NDAs, by lobbyists and some government officials while they're developing legislation. This all came about after reports that an NDA was used for outside groups negotiating a compromise bill on wages for fast food workers. Also, abortion remained in the news this week as Governor Gavin Newsom pushed a bill to allow Arizona doctors to perform abortions on women who come here for health care. It's the latest effort to make California a so-called sanctuary for women seeking abortions from states where it's banned or severely restricted. And joining me to talk about all of that and maybe a little bit more, our usual Friday duo, KQED politics correspondents Marisa Lagos and Guy Marzorati. Hey there, you two.
Hello.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, indeed. I am really ready for a
me
Friday.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. It's a little complicated. I mean, I think most of us are used to hearing about NDAs maybe in divorces or, you know, in employment situations, but Vince Fong, the Republican from assemblyman from Bakersfield, had a bill, AB 2654, which failed this week. And what it would have done, first of all, we should say this bill stemmed from negotiations over the fast food compromise bill that ultimately raised the wages of fast food workers in California starting of April 1st. And there was a report that came out during all of this that there was an exemption for Panera Bread that got put in, but there weren't a lot of details because
the state says it wasn't,
yeah.
And it yeah. really yeah. it's still unclear.
The whole thing is unclear, and part of the reason it's unclear is that there was an NDA used apparently by SEIU and some of the groups negotiating the bill,
like McDonald's and stuff. Although I don't even know if that's why it's unclear, because we've never known what individual parties outside of government who often negotiate and then bring proposed legislative language to lawmakers. Like, this is actually, I think, the way a lot of legislation gets made. You have experts in a certain area.
Yeah, and to be clear, it wasn't like the governor didn't sign it. It's unclear actually who did. But SEIU, which was in the room.
You mean signed a non-disclosure
the
agreement.
NDA. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the bill got signed. But anyway, so Guy, what's your take? I know you listened to this hearing yesterday. It was in the Elections Committee, which was chaired by Gail Pellerin, a former registrar of voters in Santa Cruz. And it was in. Why was it in the Election Committee in the first place, Guy?
Well, yeah, I mean, this had to do with the Political Reform Act, and that's why it ended up in the Elections Committee. Clearly a complicated issue, and even, let me add one more layer of complication. The NDA was regarding the subsequent negotiations around the fast food law, not the initial bill
right.
that had this whole, you know, bread exemption. But look, This would have bill that basically would have banned non-disclosure agreements between, you know, for public officials, but also for lobbyists who are working on a bill. And I think that's where it kind of ran into some headwinds. Overall, this could not have been handled worse by the chair, Gail Pellerin, and by Democrats, because basically the entire tenor of the hearing was, let's wrap this up and get this out of here as soon as possible. Pellerin read a statement that the bill is being rushed through. we've all followed many bill hearings. The, you know, I'm going to give this bill a courtesy I vote is a phrase that's often used. Many bills go through their initial hearing and are not fully baked and yet fully move on. But Pellerin voted against it. All the other Democrats did not vote. And it died in the hearing. And, you know, process aside, let's be clear. This was not the Ban Ice Cream Act of 2024. There were a lot of legitimate policy reasons not to support this bill. As, you know, the supporters of the bill themselves acknowledged at the hearing, there is no track record of NDAs being used between public officials. There's no record that that's ever...
No, they have public record laws that they have to abide by, yeah.
And then you get into this issue governing discussions around private parties. You know, even without an NDA, unions, business groups, they're under no obligation to share the details of a negotiation. You add on, you know, concerns by legislative staff that, you know, maybe this would interfere with attorney-client privileges. There was a lot of issues with this bill, but yet the story has become the fact that Democrats basically tried to get this bill killed as quickly
as
possible.
Well, and that really contributed to this whole idea of a lack of transparency.
Right, and I think it's so silly because, to Guy's point, I don't actually even understand how this bill is legal. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. You already have public officials that are bound by public laws that, you know, sort of bind in terms of, like, what they have to disclose to the public, and then also, like, in lobbyists have to disclose, like, what they're lobbying on. I don't understand how the legislature could actually say that we are going to prevent individuals outside of government to do this. But to Guy's point, like, then have that conversation in committee, because the other interesting part of this is that the whole reason I think a bill like this is getting a hearing is a promise by the relatively new speaker, Robert Rivas, that he is going to allow almost all legislation, you know, to get a public hearing instead of sort of killing
it
behind closed doors. And yet, like, if you're going to do that, then do it the right way. Because I think, to Guy's point, Democrats could have made a really good argument against this. There's not a lot of support for it. I mean, some of the bigger groups, you know, that normally disagree, Chamber of Commerce and a lot of these unions, are on the same side on this.
Well, and we should say that the person pushing this, Vince Fong, is running for Kevin McCarthy's congressional seat. It's a good issue for him. He's in a, you know, kind of a tight,
is
I guess, primary.
Is he the one pushing it, or is it our colleague
Ashley Zoff? Well, we should say, she's the TV reporter who loves, he's kind of known for chasing people down and in
shout
this case,
out,
running
shout
backwards
out to
in
Ashley
heels.
On this. Yes, because, you know, this story really blew up this week because Ashley, you know, positioned herself outside of Gail Pellerin's office and chased her down to try to get an answer that Pellerin was just unwilling to give. I mean, basically refused to do any type of interview. At this point, if you're a legislative staffer and you see Ashley Zavala outside of your member's office, it's time to start tying bed sheets together and considering the window exit, because she's, you know, putting lawmakers, holding them to account in a lot of these scenarios where, look, if you're going to be the chair of a committee, in this case, Pellerin, and just read a pre-written statement in a hearing, really try to rush this entire process and then not be able to answer any type of questions on it, it's a really bad look.
It is a bad look.
Well, and there was originally, I think, and maybe it was in the final version as well, this was going to be retroactive. You know, Vince Fong wanted this to apply to bills that had already been passed and signed.
How? How do we even know? I mean, again, I really just do want to underscore this thing, which is that I think in a perfect world, we would all love it if the people we elected got up to Sacramento and were experts in every area of policy and could write their own bills and weren't necessarily having special interest, quote unquote, which could mean anybody. It could mean, you know, a labor union, a business.
Somebody you agree with or not.
Yeah. Advocates. That's not how it works, because these, you know, 120 members are not experts in every area of policy. And so I would encourage folks to go back about a decade ago. I did a series here with our former colleague, John Myers, looking at political muscle. We did an entire story. Who writes the bills? Guess what? It's lobbyists. It's outside groups. They come to lawmakers. They hand them the language. This happens on both sides of the aisle. And then it gets tweaked, and that's fine. But
well, and it's made public. The bill is put in print, and then there are hearings.
Which it was in this case, too.
Yeah, and there are obviously opportunities to question, how did this get in there? Who put this in?
I looked back, when that language came in was in the summer during those negotiations, a year or two ago, and it was in print. And I think a lot of these questions were asked and answered at the time around why it was in there. And I don't know, I'm a little baffled just by how this has blown up. But I think, to Guy's point, the Democratic majority has not done a great job of sort of nipping this in the bud in a way that would give someone like Ashley Zavala a reason not to chase down an assembly.
So is the takeaway here media training for all members of the assembly?
Well, media training, but I think it goes back to Marisa's point about this, you know, Robert Rivas, whatever the strategy is, let every flower bloom, let, you know, every dog has its day strategy with all these hearings. You are going to see, in some cases, the underbelly of the legislature legislative process. And that's really what you got in this very condensed, very contentious hearing this week.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about another big issue on the agenda this week and actually several weeks before, which is abortion and how California might help women in Arizona circumvent a new law placing tight restrictions on the procedure there. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. Every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Rand Abdel-Fattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with KQED's Guy Marzorati and Marisa Lagos. And this week, you guys, Governor Newsom joined the Women's Legislative Caucus in announcing a bill to head off the impact of an Arizona law that would ban all abortions except in extreme circumstances, the life of the woman in jeopardy. And that could take effect on June 8th, although there are some efforts in Arizona. The lower chamber there, the House, has passed a bill to repeal a law from 1864, which triggered all of this. But this is something, obviously, that, you know, one of many, many things that the governor and Democrats in the legislature have done in the past couple of years since the Dobbs decision, Marisa. And this this one is supported by, I think, the California Medical Association. It would allow licensed doctors from Arizona to perform abortions when necessary, presumably somewhere near the border.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this is we're kind of back to our previous conversation. Lawmakers are so good at rushing things if they want to. Right. This was something that was rolled out very quickly after that pretty shocking, I would say, Arizona Supreme Court ruling. And I think what's interesting here is the politics. Right. You do have a governor in Arizona that's Democratic. You have this as a purple state in a very important election year where a handful of purple states will decide it. Arizona could be among them. And obviously, everybody is looking at the politics here as much as I think, you know, the actual underlying policy. This would be an enormously sort of important thing to not overturn in terms of just like the West and abortion access. But I think it's also good politics for Newsom and every single Democrat to be not only offering, you know, women in Arizona and doctors a place to come, but also to be making this front and center, to be talking about this at a time when Democrats want to run on abortion. They want to connect it to bigger Democratic principles, and nowhere better to do that than right next door in Arizona for Gavin Newsom, you know.
At the same time, though, Guy, the governor and his PAC, Campaign for Democracy, unveiled an ad in Alabama, which was very dramatic, showing a young woman presumably trying to leave the state to get an abortion. She's pulled over by a police officer and, you know, being forced to take a pregnancy test. I mean, a very dire, dramatic situation. But once again, we're seeing our governor, at a time when the state is facing a lot of other issues, including a big budget deficit, sort of, you know, going out into red states and poking the legislature and the governors in those states over issues that, you know, we have a different view on here in California.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that, you know, to unpack maybe how this would directly apply in California, though, is I think a lot of abortion care providers here would say, given the fact that you have, you know, hundreds, thousands of women traveling around the country because we have this, you know, breakdown of how this is handled in the states, there is a more overwhelming burden placed upon care providers in California. So basically what this bill is trying to do is alleviate that in some way by allowing care providers in Arizona to actually set up shop in California. I think, you know, as we approach this 2-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, this news like this kind of just reinforces the effect to which, you know, this has just become such a different ballgame state by state. And even, you know, you have some states working together. Nancy Skinner, who wrote this bill, said the reason she did and she was prompted to was by the Attorney General of Arizona, who reached out to Attorney General here, Rob Bont, and said, is there anything you can do to provide this kind of, you know, safe harbor for abortion care providers in California? I do think the timeline is really interesting. This bill is written to take effect in June and to sunset in November. And the reason is because there, you know, potentially is a chance that this law before Arizona even became a state goes into effect, banning all abortions in the state if the state legislature in Arizona does not act. And then in November, Arizona voters are going to have a chance to enshrine abortion rights through a ballot measure. So this is kind of a stopgap measure in the place of that. But clearly, looking ahead to November, the ballot measure in Arizona and many other states around abortion rights sets up a fight at the ballot on this issue.
And Marisa, this really shows how critical Arizona has become as a purple state.
Absolutely.
They now have a Democratic governor. Guy alluded to the attorney general, who is now also a Democrat. They're reaching out to our attorney general. And we're going to see this issue play out. And it's kind of ironic because, you know, back with the Dobbs decision, the whole point, according to conservatives on the Supreme Court, was let the states decide mm-hmm. and we won't have to deal with this. And it keeps coming back.
I mean, just this week, they had this Idaho, you know, question before them about whether the state's all-out total ban, no exceptions for incest, rape, anything else, if federal law essentially overrides it, if the health of a mother is at risk. And, you know, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how the court comes down on that, because you did have more conservative justices who voted with the majority on Dobbs, like Amy Coney Barrett, I think looking sort of aghast at these, let's call it what it is, male attorneys arguing, oh, it'll be fine. And like going, wait a second, that's not actually how it works when you're water broke, you know, in the second trimester, or you're bleeding out and hemorrhaging. Like, how is it that these doctors are supposed to be able to make this call and not be prosecuted? And then, you know, in Arizona, it is, like you said, I mean, this is something obviously in 1864, I believe, law
put back on the books.
And now you have, I think, these Republicans in a really tight spot. And I mean, look, Biden won the state by 10,000 votes. That was one of the tightest margins in the 2020 election. But it's not just that race that matters. You have a Senate seat, Ruben Gallego and Carrie Lake, a pretty like Trump-aligned MAGA conservative who lost the governor's race last time.
And who was flip-flopped on abortion.
Exactly.
As well.
Was very much in favor of this 1864 law taking effect until it did. And then is like, wait, no, we got to back off. And so I think that does show, to your point, both the importance of Arizona, but the challenge for Republicans right now.
And to add on to that, not only the Senate race, but you have two House seats up for grabs in Arizona. You have a state legislature in both houses decided by just a handful of seats. And this is, you know, when Donald Trump comes out and says that his abortion position is that whatever states decide should be the law of the land, you're leaving a fill in the blank. And the blank that Democrats can fill in are these case by case extreme examples of laws being passed in states, these all out bans, the kind of discourse that happened at the Supreme Court this week where, you know, hypotheticals are being discussed of women who basically could suffer life altering, debilitating injuries, loss of an organ, and still no intervention can be made. Those fill in the blanks are what down ballot candidates are going to have to answer for, whether that's state legislative seats, whether that's races for Congress. So I think, you know, as the party, as the Republican Party lacks a national position, as Donald Trump basically says, I don't want to take a federal position on this. Now, all these lawmakers down the ballot are kind of left to answer for these really extreme examples.
Well, and they're so extreme that you've got Amy Coney Barrett, who was part of the Dobbs decision, really questioning, in this case, the lawyer for Idaho, saying, you know, what if the local prosecutor disagrees with the doctor? Then, you know, can there be a prosecution of these physicians? And so this, you know, obviously the three liberals are going to agree, you know, that this law, you know, and this is really, we should say, this is about a federal law which requires emergency rooms to provide care when somebody comes in. And, you know, this could be a case where, you know, perhaps John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is the swing vote.
Or Coney Barrett, honestly.
Or
yeah,
Coney Barrett. And,
how,
you know,
yeah.
But you need five, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll see where that comes down in the coming weeks. But, you know, it does just show how this issue is continuing to play out. And I don't think it's sort of like, you know, the dog chasing the car that catches the car. This is what happened with Republicans. This is what they've always wanted. And now it is flipped. And it's an issue that seems to be animating Democrats. And
it puts them in a tough position, because if you look at someone like Carrie Lake,
Blake, who has lined up, you know, very conservatively on so many issues, suddenly to have this schism, then you're getting not just backlash from the left and quite frankly, throughout the political spectrum, because what we've seen is that particularly women, but I think a lot of people who maybe in the past said, yeah, I'm anti-abortion, are seeing these all out bans and are having some problems with them. But beyond that, they're also catching it from the right flank, where you do have anti-abortion groups who are angry that you have these Republican candidates who have been so good on this issue, kind of flip-flopping and making, you know, a difference. And we've seen this with Trump, where, you know, some of these bigger national groups come out and kind of push back against some of what he's said. I think it's going to be something to continue to watch, again, to Guy's point, not just at the top of the ticket, but all the way down, you know, from president to dog catcher, because people are going to get these questions in states like that in a way that it's not going to necessarily play in, like, California, probably.
Yeah. Do we have any sense of whether clinics in California, some of these Planned Parenthood clinics, for example, will have the capacity to provide these services? I mean, I think that's a big question. And are, is this, I guess, the state or maybe they, Planned Parenthood, would get additional funds to expand hours or whatever is necessary?
Yeah, this was a question that Jody Hicks, you know, head of Planned Parenthood here in California, was asked about as this bill was being unveiled. She said there really is no way to game out how this is actually going to work. I mean, part of the big unknown in this is that Arizona might still yet repeal their own, you know, all-out abortion ban. That bill passed in the Arizona House. It could potentially pass in the Senate next week. So there's a lot of unknowns there. And then when you get to how this is going to work out financially in California, one interesting piece of this is the state is soliciting private donations to try to make this fund work. I think they're establishing something called the Arizona Freedom Fund or something like that to try to make this law a reality. But look, I mean, this is the scramble that every, you know, state is dealing with in the wake of the Dobbs decision and trying to rebuild, as Hicks said, kind of rebuild this health system on a fly.
Yeah. All right. Before we go, we want to note the passing this week of Delaine Easton, who was the first and only woman to be elected statewide to be the state school superintendent. She also ran for governor in 2018. She was a very early advocate for early childhood education. She worked with Shea Panisse's Alice Waters on creating gardens in schools. And Guy, we talked with her, I think Marisa and I probably talked with her in 2018 on Political Breakdown after she had lost in the primary of that year. And let's just hear a little bit of what she had to say.
I've always been involved with progressive politics, so I'm a Common Cause League of Women Voters person, as well as a feminist who's fought for electing more women. And I obviously am going to fight for the kids and their education. That's all I know how to do.
You know, and she was really known as a real straight shooter, somebody, you just hear that voice, you know, speaking to the average person. You know, she's very plain spoken and I think very widely
and funny.
Admired.
She had
and
a really
funny.
Good sense of humor.
She did have a really good sense of humor and, you know, she will be very much missed. We still don't have, by the way, a woman governor in California. So, you know, she may, maybe in 2016 or 20, maybe in 2026, that'll change. We will see.
We've got a lot of women running and lining up to run potentially. So
yeah.
Should be interesting.
But yeah, she was a pioneer.
She was. And I'll say, you know, the last time I talked to Delaine was actually last fall. Maurice and I were doing a story about the ways in which you know, transgender reporting laws were roiling local school districts. And Delaine does leave us at a time when these school politics are so fraught. I mean, that's an issue she cared deeply about. But and it's going to be an issue that really dominates, I think, the political landscape here in the months to come, as you've got multiple recall elections coming up against conservative school board members. You have all these fights, whether it's about curriculum, whether about, you know, pride flags at schools. These are, you know, issues that I know Delaine would have been out fighting for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Guy Marzorati, Marisa Lagos, thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too.
All right, take care.
All righty. That is a wrap for Friday, April 26th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Catherine Monahan. Our producer is Dana Cronin. Our team includes Izzy Bloom, Molly Solomon, Otis R. Taylor Jr., and Ethan Tovin Lindsay. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org. bankofamerica.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.